Welcome to Yak Babies. My name is Aaron. I'm here with Dave.
Hey, babies.
And Brick.
Hi, Dave.
Now, everyone. Hey, what do we mean? This episode is going to be shocking because we're talking about books that shocked us. Brick, tell us about this topic.
I found myself thinking about a book I read in middle school and how it really kind of fucked me up because it wasn't what I was expecting it to be, and it ended up being fairly graphic. It sort of changed my perspective a little bit, like my life perspective. So I maybe wanted to talk about that a little bit and then see if you guys similarly ever had books, probably when you were children, but maybe as an adult, that sort of shocked you to the point that it maybe changed how you think about things to whatever degree makes the most sense for you.
Yeah.
So the book I'm thinking of, I read in either seventh or eighth grade. I can't remember. I think eighth grade. And it was called Kaffir Boy.
Kaffir Boy.
By Mark Mathabane. Kaffir is a Kaffir is a racial slur used in South Africa to talk to black people. It's Afrikaans, I believe. Mm. Also, there's a fruit called a Kaffir lime, which sounds not great.
Mm.
So there's a point in this book where the main character is raped, and this is a book that was assigned to me when I what are you in eighth grade 12? I wasn't expecting it. I was expecting, you know, like, the books you get, especially growing up a white boy in New Hampshire, the books you get that tackle racism do so pretty tepidly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's more like, yeah, it was bad, but things are good now.
Right.
Right. Make sure you don't say the N-word. And that's sort of the extent of teaching racism probably in most of America.
Right.
So to read this book about, you know, and this was in the 90s. Right around the time that apartheid was being torn down, so it was front and center. And then reading this book and how graphic it was, and then the pain both physically and then the emotional pain that followed it, and how he had to respond to this horrible, traumatic moment in his life, really kind of, he resonated as a human in a book that I don't know if I'd ever put together quite the same way before. It's not a true story, I don't believe. I haven't read the book since, but it's not like one of those like biography kind of things, but it really kind of made me think about the world differently and realize that I think that was the first time I really realized that I had lived in a bubble. And I started since then more actively. I think that was maybe the start of my preoccupation with books that explore other perspectives. Yeah. So I don't know. Have you guys ever had that experience? If so, do you remember it?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think that's when you're younger, especially, and maybe for people who are searching young readers, looking for different texts to read, you'll read something that's maybe above your level and then something like, holy shit, like this is, I shouldn't be reading this.
Right.
I remember a friend of mine, I think it was actually a listener to this podcast, I won't identify him just in case, read Disclosure, like with the Michael Crichton novel about like sexual harassment.
Right.
But like, it's the woman does it this time. Dun, dun, dun.
Right.
I think when he was in like sixth grade, maybe, and like was way too young to be reading Disclosure. And it was just there's that kind of thing where like you're looking for titillation and provocation because you're just a young, you know, twerp like we all were. But being sort of more shocked by like ideas or sort of perspectives, I definitely remember being shocked by The Giver when I read that in sixth grade, probably, or maybe seventh grade, because it maybe was the first thing I read that was controversial, I guess, potentially, or there was some disagreement about, or it asked you to question some assumptions in some ways. I remember having fierce quote-unquote debates, I guess, in a reading class in sixth grade about what it meant and what was right and what was not right. And it definitely shook me quite a bit. It was a startling book. But my example that I want to talk about when we first mentioned this topic is from grad school when I was much older, which was The End of Alice by A.M. Holmes.
Oh, yeah, that one book
fucked me up.
That was rough, man.
And that's a combination of it being hard to stomach, just period. It's a brutal novel. It's about a murderer, pedophile, becoming friends with a young girl who becomes a pedophile herself.
Pedophile in training.
Yeah, it's real twisted, and the ending is incredibly bloody, literally. And it was hard to read.
There were some parts of that book that made me want to throw up.
Yeah. And that's the same class. You and I were in that class together.
Yes, we were.
And that class also on the reading list was Marabou Stork Nightmares by Irvine Welsh, which is also a fucked up book.
I don't think I've ever even heard of that book.
Really?
Yeah.
It's a dude who wrote Train Spotting.
Yeah, it's pretty rough, too. There's some vile stuff in that book as well, which, I mean, not surprising. I liked End of Alice a lot as a book, and maybe more so than Marabou Stork Nightmares, but it was hard to even process it. Even in class or discussion, I felt I didn't want to say too much. So I was like, this is just, I'm still sitting with these images and these ideas. So yeah, late in life, when I had already seen plenty of horrible shit and read horrible shit in novels and movies and television and so forth, and thought I was unshockable. Prove me wrong, which is, I guess, good. So good job, A.M. Holmes. Dave, what about you?
I meant to go through my reading list to see if I could remember.
Yeah.
Anything that jumped out at me in the past 10 years, I guess, or however long I've been keeping a list, and I didn't, so sorry about that. One example I have is, are either of you guys familiar with James Hines? Aaron, I think you would really like him. He writes a lot of satiric fiction about academia.
Okay.
Seems up your alley.
Yeah.
He wrote a novel called Next, where a guy who lives in Ann Arbor flies down to Austin, Texas for a job interview. And the whole book is basically this guy just like ruminating. He's in his 50s. His life kind of sucks. He's unhappy. He's kind of lecherous. And it's like him following this young woman around the city of Austin all day. But then in the background, and I guess minor spoiler, I won't go too deep into it, I suppose, but it's also a 10-year-old literary fiction novel, so I don't think it's too much damage being done here. Kind of peppered throughout this guy's day are references, things he hears about on TV or radio about terrorist attacks spreading throughout Europe.
Oh, wow.
And this guy occasionally kind of thinks about what he would do or what the experience would be like if he were, you know, caught up in a terrorist attack.
Right.
But, you know, lives in Ann Arbor. He's in Austin now, thinking about moving to Austin. It's like those are not hot spots.
So right.
You realize that it's just this kind of solipsistic guy, you know, thinking about something that'll never happen. Mm. And then it does.
Oh, wow.
And the last 50 pages, you do not see it coming as a reader whatsoever. And it's been so long since I read it, I don't really even remember the specifics, but I remember the last 50 pages being so intense, and partly because of how off guard it caught me, that I was shocked and just like turning pages as fast as I could at the end. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was very impressive.
Huh. And that's, you said, about 10 years old?
Yeah, maybe it came out in 2010, 2011.
Huh. Interesting. Yeah. That's another example of like a you know, still being able to be shocked at an older age, right?
Yeah,
so as there's something about being an established reader and thinking that you're immune and have a sort of finely honed critical eye to then be sort of taken aback or sort of be sort of reminded that, you know, storytelling can still push you a little bit.
I was shocked not only at what happens, like the plot points at themselves, but also by how caught up in it I got. Like how unexpected it was. And it's just like really well done.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Are there, like, vice versa, books that maybe you thought you were going to be shocked by or that you read because of reputation in some way that ended up sort of being fizzling for you, things that just, like, didn't quite have the impact you thought they would?
Yeah, I have one that I read in Ireland. It's called The Cabin at the End of the World, and the writer is a horror writer named Paul Tremblay.
Hmm.
I didn't hear much about the actual plot going into it, but I heard that it's horrifying, and like shockingly horrifying, I think specifically is something I read in a couple of reviews, and it wasn't. Was it not shocking, but it also didn't tap anything in me fear wise. It turned out, I mean, it's just like a home invasion type novel,
right?
Did you talk about this? Sounds really familiar.
I maybe talked about it in a What Are We Reading? Because I read it in Ireland when I was visiting our fellow Yak Baby Nico, old Irish Nico.
Gotcha.
So, yeah, I was going into it hoping to be shocked and kind of horrified, and instead the opposite. It was a big fizzle, a big wet fart.
Right.
I don't really read things with the expect. I mean, I think it's impossible to expect to be shocked.
Right.
I would say that things that, if it seems like the purpose is to shock, then I'm probably not even going to start that book because that doesn't appeal to me.
Right. Whenever Catcher in the Rye, because I knew that it was associated with like assassins, right? Like John Lennon's killer read it before he shot John Lennon. I think maybe even John Hinckley had a copy of it too before he shot Reagan. That going into it, I was like, holy shit, this book's going to be fucking crazy. There's going to be some sort of like assassin thing in here. And I was bracing for it. I got to then, I was like, huh, it didn't have any of that. Like I was definitely primed to be shocked by Catcher in the Rye and, you know, liked it, but didn't have, it wasn't like I was radicalized by it. I remember one last one. I think I mentioned this before in the podcast too. There was a comic short story in the back. It was a backup story in an issue of House of Mystery from maybe about, again, 10 years back, written by Lila Sturgis and drawn by Gene Ha. And it's about a serial killer. He's narrating to the reader, like breaking the fourth wall, talking directly to you and saying that he's in a mall. He's talking about how he's going to kill everyone in the mall. That's his plan. That's what he wants to do. He's a killer. He's unremorseful, you know, sociopathic, whatever. You can't stop him. But he says that I can't do it without you because you're turning the pages and you are reading the panel. So if you don't turn this page, everyone will live. but also I know you're going to because you want to see the gore. You're like, you're addicted to the spectacle of, you know, violence and trauma, and so you're going to flip the page and you're going to allow me to kill. So, like, this is on you. You can stop it if you want to, but you're not going to. And it does, like, has a page where you're like, you have to turn the page. And I remember reading it and thinking, well, I probably shouldn't turn the page then. Like, I don't want to be complicit in this. And I did, and then people get murdered. And you're like, Jesus fucking Christ. And it felt horrible. I still feel the impact of that story. It was a small story, but it really hit the right way. And I've reached out to that writer before on Twitter to be like, hey, I just, that story, I think about it constantly, and it's really upsetting. And he or she was like, that's maybe not a good sign. Like, I don't know. Probably not, actually. But yeah, that one really shocked me quite a bit. Listeners, how are you shocked? What shocks you? What books, stories, texts have rattled you to your core? Tell us on YakBabies, at YakBabies on Twitter, rather, and email us at YakBabiesPodcast@gmail.com. Find us on Patreon for $1. Sorry, Patreon.com/YakBabies for $1 a month. You can get access to all of YakBabies, which is where we're doing fun and games. We're talking about buttholes and lots of shame going on in YakBabies. Definitely worth $1 to hear all that stuff, bearing our shocking little souls. Until then, Yak Babies, yakking off.
The Yak Babies would like to send an extra thank you to everyone who listens regularly, and especially to those who have supported on Patreon, past and present, including Michael, Bonnie, and William Howard Taft.